I'm going to try to squeeze another talk in here. Getting good use of this tape, Bill. This is a recording of Rod LaRocque of Hollywood, California, the old movie star. Been in AA quite a few years. No doubt you have one of his talks on a tape. This recording was made at Redding, California, October 3rd, 1959, by Bill Mitchell of Modesto, California. Bill and I have exchanged several tapes, and Bonnie and I enjoyed it. It's a real swell AA talk, not too long, and I hope it fits here on the end of this reel before we turn over on the other side.
An all-time movie great, folks. Some of you may remember, starred in Cecil DeMille's great production, The Ten Commandments. And after that, The Lucky Dog, you may give me a kick for this, married Vilma Banky, who is one of the movie greats, as you all know. And with those remarks, I want to introduce the guest speaker of the evening, Rod LaRocque.
Letting me visit with you this evening. I think this is one of the most wonderful communities I've ever come to. The trip in by air today is something I'll remember as long as I live. And I was just speaking with Father here. I think we should set up some sort of a fund so that all the school children of this community could see this beautiful country from the air. It's the only way you can see it and appreciate its real beauty. I'm indebted to you. I was told about that today.
Can I help you, Rod? I'll go out and push it off the crest.
It's all right. I was told just to wait for it, so... it goes. Going. On the way over this evening, like the Dodgers, they never give up, you know. How enthusiastic I am about Alcoholics Anonymous. On the other hand, I always wonder if we need a full hour, brevity being the soul of wit. I'm reminded of the school teacher who is tired of her class of young monsters and decided by some means or other to get an afternoon of reading in for herself. So she thought of an assignment. Getting further away now. That's lovely, isn't it? She thought of an assignment to give the kids that would keep them so busy that they'd be snowed under. So she said, the assignment this afternoon is a composition, and in that composition, I want you to employ the four methods of journalism, four methods of good storytelling. They include deity, royalty, sex, and mystery. And I want you to write a composition, and I want it to contain those four basic elements. Deity, royalty, sex, and mystery. You may start at once, please. So the kid started, and she picked up the novel, of course, and thought, this is going to be great, you know. And after a few minutes, in her line of vision, in about the third row, she saw little Johnny very ostentatiously put down his pencil and shove his papers up and fold his arms. And this worried her a little bit. So she looked up and she saw him doing nothing. She said, Johnny, there was an assignment to be completed in the classroom today. He said, yes, teacher. She said, you know, it was a story, a composition. He said, yes, teacher. She says, you were to employ the four journals of good storytelling. Deity, royalty, sex, and mystery. He says, that's right, teacher. He says, well, why aren't you writing? He says, I'm finished. She says, you are? He says, yes. She said, well, I'm sure the class would like very much to hear this masterpiece. Class at ease. Johnny says he's finished his assignment. He'll read it to us now. Johnny, you may stand and read. So he says, all right, teacher. And he picked up his paper, and he read, God, cried the queen, the princess is pregnant. Who done it? Sober because I'm not drinking. I'm not drinking because I'm an AA. Everything I will ever know, or more than I'll know, is in the book. It's the best $4.50 ever spent. Buy it and read it, and I'll see you later. But it doesn't quite work that way. The group therapy is the thing. Thomas Mann said, language is civilization itself. A word, even a negative word, preserves contact. It's silence which isolates. And we know what we did to ourselves when we were silent, and how horrible isolation is. A group of us have sort of studied. I think maybe we're trying to pay as much attention to the steps as possible. Fortunately, so many good things have happened to me. God is so good. The people he's let me know and the things he's allowed to happen to me. Of course, I have to say truthfully that from the very beginning, the experience for me has been completely spiritual. I say that in such humility, I can't tell you. There was no flash, no burning bushes, nothing esoteric, but it was spiritual. And it happened in so many ways. Sometime during the first year that I was on the program, a young man came to me at one of our beginners meetings, and you know how much we know in that first year. Gee, isn't it terrible? You know, as Mark Twain once said, it's not what the guy doesn't know that causes his ignorance, it's the things he knows that ain't true. So I guess I was a little bit overenthusiastic one evening, and a young man came up to me and said, Rod, you go for this 12-step thing, don't you? And I said, oh, but completely, completely. He said, uh-huh. You know, it's double talk, don't you? I said, it's what? He says, this is double talk. They're all mixed up on the semantics. So I said, they are? He said, look at the 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of those steps, we put those steps in quotes, we tried to carry the message to alcoholics and practice these principles, and we'll put these principles in quotes, in all our affairs. He says, now, isn't that great? As a result of those steps, we're going to practice these principles. Look, they're talking about two different things. This is crazy. Well, from the very beginning, I have needed it so badly. I have wanted it more than anything else in the world. I can truthfully say I was willing to go to any length to get it. And thank God I've always been willing to go to any length to keep it. But this started to throw me for a curve, and I was blessed with a magnificent sponsor, Sterling Scott. God rest his soul. And, of course, like a baby chick that some hen had picked on, I ran to Papa, you see. Sterling, someone's finding fault with us. So anyway, I said, look, this guy says the 12th step is nuts. So I said, well, let's talk about it. Let's think it over. Well, now, here was one of the greatest things that ever happened to me. Because the steps suggest principles. And these principles, the thing I wanted to do from the beginning, if I could, was memorize the steps. Because I thought, I want this with me forever. This is something, it's like anything else. It's no good if you don't use it. This has to be constant. This has to be ever-present. I knew that much. So, then we started to work and said, well, now, wait a minute. It may be that the steps suggest principles. And in finding the principle that is suggested by the steps, we would be practicing that principle, and then understanding the principle would help us remember the step. So we found, in number one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable, that this represented the principle of honesty and acceptance. And we can use those principles in everyday life, honesty and acceptance. And understanding the principle, honesty and acceptance, reminded us of that first step, and that first step reminded us of those principles. And we found acceptance to be important, that it was necessary not only to admit and to be honest, but to accept. It's like the two women, you know, who were talking over the back fence visiting. And one was saying to the other, you know, it's wonderful that your husband has given up drinking. It's so wonderful. But it's too bad that he's replaced it with another bad habit. He said, oh, he has. He said, yes, he has. You know, he's running after every woman on the block. She says, oh, well. So what? I accept that. She says, you accept it? She says, sure, why not? She says, you know that dog of ours? He chases every car that goes by, but you know he can't drive. We learn to accept it. I can't drink. I mean, I can't speak Chinese. I'd love to. You know, it'd be a wonderful accomplishment. I can't play the violin. I can't play ball like the Dodgers, thank God. So, that's just one more thing I can't do. So, those were the principles for step number one. And step number two came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Now, this is the principle of hope. And we need that in our everyday life. That's a practical principle, hope. And hope reminded us of the second step. And the second step reminded us of hope. And in the third, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand Him. The principle of faith. And we need that every day of our lives. And the principle of freedom. God as we understand Him. It's the reason we have a United States of America. Because people wanted to worship God as they understood Him, not according to the dictates of some sovereign. So here we have a principle of faith and a principle of freedom. Now the fourth one is dynamite. Made a searching moral inventory of ourselves. And this, it seemed to us, represented the principle of courage. Courage. And we need that. We need lots of it. And courage reminded us of the fourth step, and the fourth step reminded us of courage. And then the fifth step, admitted to God, to ourselves, and another human being, the exact nature of our wrong. Here's the three-way thing. You can't fool with this. Principle of integrity. And we all need that. And integrity reminds us of the fifth step, and the fifth step brought integrity to mind. And then the wonderful sixth step, we're entirely willing to have God remove all these defects of character. The principle of willingness. We'll only be willing and grateful. The contentment there is in that willingness. Surrender. We're surrendering to the most beautiful power on earth. What is there to be shameful about that surrender? We had to surrender to liquor. Good God, you might as well say you surrendered to the devil. We did. So here's the greatest victory in the world, this surrender, this willingness. So the sixth step reminded us of that principle of willingness, and willingness brought the sixth step to mind. And then the seventh step, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. The beautiful principle of humility. Humility. How wonderful it is that we can attain some of it. And that step represented humility, and humility for us was number seven. And the eighth step made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. At last, the principle of brotherly love, we do begin to think of somebody else. You know, that's wonderful. That's wonderful, that eighth. And the ninth made direct amends wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. The principle of discipline. Discipline. How we need to be disciplined. And the tenth step, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. The principle of persistence, of continuity, and the understanding that it isn't the question of who, it is what. It's not who's right, it's what is right. That wonderful little boy's prayer, "Dear God, when I'm wrong, please make me easy to change. And when I'm right, please make me easy to live with." a boy's prayer. And the 11th step, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. His will for us and the power to carry that out. The principle of God in everything. God sleeps in the minerals, dreams in the flowers, moves in the animals, and then man knows he is alive. God is everywhere. And the wonderful 12th step. Having had a spiritual awakening because of these steps, we try to carry the message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. The principle of service. We keep what we've got by sharing it. The service we render is the rent we pay for the space we take up on earth. There's no limit to the amount of good we can do if we don't care who gets the credit. So, those principles helped us to remember the steps. And those are the principles that the steps reminded us of. Now, I suppose each individual and each group will probably work out principles of their own. But I think, after 11 years of study, that that's what is meant in the 12th step. When it says, as a result of those principles, as a result of those steps, we try to practice these principles. Then another wonderful thing happened to me. As I say, my sponsor was magnificent. I'll never forget the first day as long as I live. And I found later that he used a thing that he called the 5 C's of the 12th step. And he had done it so wonderfully that I had to study it. And the 5 C's are confidence, confession, conviction, conversion, and continuance. When Sterling visited me on that memorable day, I was so beat and so gone, and he confided in me. He assured me that this was a disease of a twofold nature, an allergy of the body, an obsession of the mind, that I was not the only one that was guilty of all these horrible things I had done. And God had forgiven me. It's up to me now to forgive myself. And he told me about himself and confided in me, and of course that helped me to confide in him, and it led to the second C, a confession, and I confess. And I'll forever remember the relief it was to be able to tell these things to someone that I felt understood. It does take an alcoholic to understand an alcoholic. And I told him things that I had never told any other person. And it was a great, great relief. So there was confidence and confession. And then there was conviction. He convinced me on this. And he had such absolute sincerity. His intensity of purpose was beyond question. And he had nothing to gain. He had answered a wild call. And had just come to help a fellow that he had never met before, who was in terrible trouble, the most terrible trouble. And I was convinced. I was convinced of this sincerity, of this honesty. And that led to conversion. I believed it. I accepted it. Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. So we must be what we think, to some extent at least. And I had remembered in school, we had a mathematics professor. When we were studying navigation and triangulation, we had to learn a thing. One ship sails east and another sails west in spite of the winds that blow. It's the set of the sail, not the gale, that determines where they go. Set of the sail. So we set our sails for sobriety and we stand some chance of going in that direction. We reverse them and we will certainly go in the opposite direction. Softer things and their airy wings are swifter than carrier doves. They follow the laws of the universe. Each thing must create its kind. And as they go o'er the track, they'll bring you back whatever went out from your mind. So we do contribute very generously to the environment in which we live. And we contribute here to the environment of sobriety. We, through our association with one another, through our communication with one another, through our anxiousness to understand and to help, we create an atmosphere of sobriety and we benefit from it. And then there was, of course, confidence, confession, conviction, conversion, and then there was continuance. Sterling never let go of me, and I'll never forget that was a Sunday, and he called me the next morning. He left the book with me that night, and I remember I read it through the night as much as I could, and got wonderful benefits from it. Began to feel that this was something, that something was happening. I couldn't explain it and didn't know what it was, but I felt very definitely. And then the next morning, Sterling said, you know, Rod, the important things are the meetings. So I said, yes. And he said, I think we have to go to one as soon as possible. So I said, well, you know, when I get in shape and get a hold of myself. He said, no, I think we'll go tonight. Sterling, you know, look, I haven't shaved. I've got butterflies. I can't hold anything in my hands. And I look terrible. He says, listen, Buster, where I'm taking you, nobody cares how you look. And some of us have looked so much worse than you ever will. So, well, he'd been right about everything. So he set a meeting. So I said, all right, we go to the meeting. Well, it was a great, great experience. I can't say that I remember everything, but I came away with one marvelous feeling that I wanted more of whatever it was. I didn't know what it was. I just wanted more of it. And I told Sterling after the meeting, when can we go to another one? I didn't know they had them every night. So he said, tomorrow night we'll go to another one. So I said, all right, if that's the order, then we'll do it then. Because I knew I wanted it. And my second meeting, I'll remember as long as I live. I learned to pray at an AA meeting. I was an altar boy until I was 11 years old. And I had said the Lord's Prayer all my life, you know. But it was just old American, you know. And I didn't know, you know, I just didn't know. And I wonder, I'm 61, 11 years ago I was 50. A guy has to grow to be 50 years old before he gets the beauty of the Lord's Prayer. It's crazy, you know. You wouldn't believe that it'd take a guy a half century to learn a simple lesson like that. But when we stood at my second AA meeting and together said, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done. I felt someone there was praying for me. I guess I can't explain it. I haven't the words. But it was some sort of peace that came over me. And I thought, gee, if that's the way this happens, then I gotta pray for the other fellow. And I did that night. I offered my prayer for whoever might need it more than I did. And I learned to pray it in A&E. And after that, I thought, that there's so much beauty in that prayer. When the apostle said, Jesus, how do we pray? And he said, thusly, Our Father. Not my Father, our, yours and mine. We all need each other. We're all related. This is a very integral thing, brotherhood. Our Father, give us this day 24 hours. We can only live a day at a time. That's the program. Give us this day. All we have is now. We couldn't use 2 days if we had to. Just give us this day our daily bread. And thy will be done. Thy will be done. Thy will be done, not mine. Thy will be done with my help, not my will be done with thy help. It's so different, isn't it? And you know, I thought all the time that I had prayed, I would be so loud, God, please deliver me from this awful dream. And I'd look around, you know, and the Holy Ghost hadn't come down and blown away with the bottle. So I said, He doesn't want me to stop. I gotta go on doing it. You know, there was a little boy, a little southern boy, and he was pretty clever, and he used to pray. He said, God, please send me a chicken. I need a chicken. God, I could use a chicken. Come on, send me a chicken, God. I could use a chicken. I like chicken, God. Send me a chicken. And nothing happened. So I said, now, wait a minute here, boy. I know there's a God, and I know there's plenty of chicken. So I'm doing this wrong. So, the next morning he changed his prayer. He said, God, please send me out after a chicken. Please send me out after a chicken. I never thought of asking God to send me out after sobriety. I was just hoping He'd send it to me, you know. But it doesn't work that way. So many things have come to me. This is this has resolved all of the philosophies somehow. I remember one night, Vilma and I happened to look up self, S-E-L-F, self, the word self. We just wondered, what is self? What does it do? And studying the cross references in this thing, Socrates said, know thyself. And Aristotle said, be thyself. And Jesus said, give thyself. And it seemed that the program explained that to me. I didn't understand it in that language, but I understood it in this language. How can we know ourselves until we take the inventory? How can we be ourselves until we decide that we have to be rigorously honest? And giving ourselves, of course, is the 12th step. And our method of keeping what we have. And I was reminded of a meeting I had in Germany. It was before I came on the program. And we were in Berlin just previous to the last war. And Dr. Einstein was still there. He was still teaching at the university. And he was to lecture. So, I don't know, I guess I was half loaded or something, you know. I said, if he's going to lecture, I'm going to listen to him. Just absolute crazy, you know. I wouldn't know what he was talking about if he was saying it in English. It was a cinch, my German. But I had to hear Einstein. If he's going to lecture, Barack's going to listen to him. Well, I didn't have any trouble. I barged in all right and got there. But the funny thing, I was greatly impressed with this man's amazing, amazing humility and patience. Even though the language and the jargon, all of it, was completely foreign to me. But I felt that I owed him an apology. So when it was over, I went up and told him so. I said, I didn't belong here today, you know. He says, well, if you didn't belong here, you wouldn't have been here. There's a reason someplace. So I didn't want to tangle with him, you know. I said, well, if you say so, that's all right. However, I'm sorry. I mean, maybe I took the place of someone who deserved being here and who knows more about this than I do. And I said, but I wonder if you could, in some way, explain this amazing philosophy to a layman, a layman. He says, well, moment, please. Maybe someday in your lifetime you've held in your hand the acorn, yeah? I thought he was giving me double answers or something like this. I thought sometime in my life I've held an acorn. But I thought, no, this fellow's sincere. And I, during my boyhood, you know, I said, you mean the seed of the oak tree, the acorn? He says, yeah. So I said, yes, I've held that in my hand. I have. He says, then you should remember. When you held in your hand the acorn, you held all the dimensions of the oak tree. So I was holding oak tree, you know. But later on, after I had studied this book, I knew what he was talking about. Because here in my hand, I hold all the dimensions of my sobriety, of my future, and my life with you. This is the acorn. The key is always smaller than the door, but this will open the avenues to everywhere. A friend of ours in Hollywood, he belonged to the motion picture group, Dick Coburn. And before he died, he wrote a poem that he called Impressions of the 12 Steps. There's a group of us that use it as a prayer, and we call it the 12 Step Prayer. I'm climbing up 12 golden steps where other souls have trod. I hear their voices calling back, climb up, you'll find God. Upon the first step, sick and worn, I whisper, Lord, I'm through. Then on the second, still forlorn, my hope is born anew. The third step opens up to me, a God I understand. The fourth shines bright with honesty, shows me the promised land. The fifth step finds me saying yes to all the wrongs I've done. And the sixth finds me in readiness for him to right each one. The seventh step, and pride has changed to sincere humbleness. The eighth has found me now estranged from hate and willful stress. The ninth step sees me clinging there, so willing to atone. The tenth just bids me to be fair, leave that first drink alone. The 11th step shows me God's will, a power strange and new. And the 12th says, never stop until you've told other drunks it's true. So I'm climbing up 12 golden steps where other souls have trod. I hear their voices calling back, climb up, you'll find God. Thank you.